Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of June 6th through 13th. This is our first bi-weekly issue this summer, so we'll be doing a bi-weekly podcast. And this week we feature an interview that Associate Editor Carrie Weber did with Sister Joyce Rupp at the LA Religious Education Congress back in March, in which they talked about her new book, Fragments of Your Ancient Name.
Hello, this is Carrie Weber, Associate Editor for America Magazine. I'm here today with Joyce Rupp, spiritual author and spiritual director. Thank you so much for joining us, Sister Joyce.
Thank you, Carrie. I'm happy to be with you today.
Now, you recently put out a new book called Fragments of Your Ancient Name. I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about where the idea for this book came from.
Well, you know, the seed of it started about, it has to be about 15 years ago. And I was living in Boulder, Colorado at the time. And I met the Sufis out there, and the Sufis are the mystical branch of Islam. And so I went to one of their zikrs, which is a prayer service where they recite or chant, they usually chant the 99 most beautiful names. And I just love the idea of their chanting this one name over and over again. You know, and their names are beautiful, you know, the most compassionate, the most merciful, the bestower, the bountiful. And so I got thinking about that, and I thought, you know, I bet there's 365 names. And then I thought, well, I'll go to Scripture, and I'll go through, you know, the Jewish Scriptures and then the Christian ones. And then I started finding names of God everywhere. I found them in literature, poems, songs. I mean, it was astounding to me. It's like my antennae were up. So for really, it was about 12 years. I just had this file, and I kept popping names of God in there and where I saw them. And finally, in about 2 years ago, I thought, it's time. I'm ready to try this. And then I thought, oh, my gosh, what if I get to 200 and I can't write anything more about God? So then I made sure I had at least, and it was easy, really. It's amazing. It was easy to get 365 and not have them very duplicated either. It was just really something. So that's how I got started on it, and I love doing this book. It was really, really fun.
Yeah. And now, what is the significance of a name for people? It seems like an interesting entry point into a relationship with God.
Well, you know, I was really surprised. I gave a talk the other day, and I was amazed at how interested people are in the names of God. And then I was talking with them about a name, and I said, you know, as soon as we say someone's name, we begin a relationship. And I think all of us love the names that we're, you know, we want to be called by a certain name. And it's important to us. It identifies us. A name says something about who we are. Many times we're named after someone. But I think when we say someone's name, we immediately begin some kind of connection. So I think that's why the names of God are important. And definitely all the names we have for the divine, each one of them is a certain quality. It reflects a certain quality that we attribute to the divine. So I think that's why names have become very important to people.
Right. And so what do you think shapes the way we maybe choose what we call God, the names that we might use individually?
Oh, you know, I think it's a lot of things. I think, first of all, it's what we're taught as children. Our life events have a lot to do with, and then our education later on, and certainly church doctrine for some people. If they're in an organized religion, they're taking that name. I remember for me a real turning point when I always used to think it was basically the Trinity, you know, and Jesus. And then I was reading an article by Sandra Schneider's, the theologian, oh gosh, many years ago, and she had this comment in her article, and she said, God is more than two men and a bird. And I started laughing when I read that, and I knew she wasn't disparaging the Trinity, you know, Father, Son, and Spirit, but she really was trying to open it up and say there are so many ways we can think about the divine. And that got me, you know, really thinking in my own life, wow, have I just boxed the divine into just some, you know, very small compartment? Or, you know, what is my vision of who this divine one is? My vision has grown so much, and I remember, back in probably the mid-80s yet, even at that time, I heard people referring to God as she, and I started laughing, and I thought, oh, you know, well, that's kind of weird. And then someone, a publisher had asked me if I'd ever consider writing a book on women's spirituality, And when I decided to do it, I decided I would do it around Holy Wisdom. And lo and behold, I discovered the Greek name for wisdom is Sophia. And then I went to Proverbs and some of the wisdom literature and found out that indeed, you know, Holy Wisdom is referred to as she. And then I read Riani Eisler's book, The Chalice and the Blade, which is a lot of the historical perspective on how the feminine aspect of the divine was lost. So that was one turning point for me in being able to at least to think about the divine more than even just masculine terms. Then another one, and this is still happening for me, there's so much going on with quantum physics today and about the expanding universe and how we are all connected with this energy. And so then I think, well, now how is that influencing who this divine presence is? And I'm reading a lot in science literature about their reflection on the great mind or the connection, and so who knows where all that's going to go.
Right. No, that's interesting that you would bring up the idea of sort of feminine names for God, because sometimes it seems to me the names that we call God, while maybe building a relationship with God, can be divisive among people. Like what you call God and what I call God might actually seem to contradict each other. How can we reconcile that, or does that need to be reconciled, or is this just different ways of expressing it?
You know, one of the reasons that I wrote this book is because of the hostility that I feel is among so many religions, and it's like my God is better than your God, and my God can do this, and you should just think about God in one particular way, and you're a heretic or something if you don't think about God in that way. And actually, I really hope that as people see how all of these names are reflective of a quality of the divine. It's not taking anything away. It's really adding to our perspective. And truly, every name that we have for the divine is a projection of our humanity. You know, we put onto the divine what we think that this divine being is. But there's just, it really saddens me that there's all this hostility and the separation. And I often think it's just so amazing to me that in the Roman Catholic liturgy, we never refer to God as she. And I think, why is that? And even John Paul I said, you know, God is both our father and mother. And I thought, surely you'd think at least we could use mother once in a while. But it's not happening. So I just hope that the book, you know, what I've looked at will expand people's view of the divine.
Right. So do you think that, in your experience or experience of speaking with others, do people's names for God change over time? You know, I grew up God, Lord, Jesus, you know, this is how you pray. These are the names you use. But, you know, as you grow older, you see these names that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Do you find most people stick with, you know, the original names, or are they willing to sort of branch out and get more from these other names?
Well, I guess it depends on who you talk to. I think someone who's more traditional has really stayed with very basic names for the divine. I go to some groups and they're addressing God in many, a great variety of ways. So, again, I think it comes out of our lived experience. And part of that lived experience is whether or not we are connected to a very definite religion, and then how we feel within that religion. That makes a big difference. I know when I was probably in my 30s, I really was attracted to Native American spirituality. And so for a while I was thinking of Great Spirit, you know, as a name for the divine. And then when I was doing, and I still pray to God as Sophia many times, and I certainly never did that when I was younger, you know. So I think it does change. The one thing I noticed about names is, and people talking about their names for God, it's a very intimate kind of thing, and people they don't readily speak about, like, this is how I feel about God, or this is how I relate to God, because it's very personal.
Yeah, it can be harder to talk about a relationship with God than with a relationship with a person.
Well, and I think, too, that it's really different in personal prayer and communal prayer, because communal prayer is so much more formal, and people in one sense are kind of the captive audience, so to speak, and so they are just kind of given the names for the divine that they'll be using during that time. But personal prayer is wide open, and it is much more intimate, I think, than communal prayer.
You say the events of our life can shape the names that we use for God. Can choosing a new name for God help to change the way that we approach life, change the events in our life? If you start praying using a different name, can that help you with a new perspective?
Definitely. I think of someone who has thought about God more, let's just say they use the name Father But if they've had an abusive father, and then they really get some therapy for that, and they stop using the name father, and whatever name they might choose, whether that would be friend or companion or something, I mean, that would be make a great difference in their life. And I know I know someone whose parents were very strict with her, and she, you know, could never think about Jesus other than someone who was just very judgmental and so forth. That was her idea, you know, that. And so, you know, she began using other names for God, and eventually brought her back to see, to experience Christ in another way. But she had to get out of that for a while. So, you know, it doesn't mean that a person's not growing in their spirituality. It's just that names really do affect people, and they definitely do change in how they name the divine, but depending on what their lived experience is.
Yeah. Right.
Were there any names as you went through this book that you found surprising or new that offered you a particularly interesting insight into who you saw God as?
You know, sometimes some of the names were difficult for me. Like, I would never call God Judge, my Judge, and yet, you know, it's there in some of the Psalms, and certainly some people think of that. So I had to sit with that for a long time, and it was really a good thing for me, because I thought, you know, well, of course, I mean, God can be my judge. My view of what a judge is, though, I had to change. And so then after that happened, I could write the prayer, you know. But the names that I loved were the names I got from poetry and literature, especially Rilke. He has one of the names is Drifting Mist. I just loved that. And I sat with that one morning, and then I began thinking about, well, you know, divinity really is like the fog that comes in quietly, and it kind of drifts in, and it settles, and it covers everything. And then I really got in touch with the presence of God that way. It was really beautiful. And then Karl Rahner, the German theologian, has one, God of my joy, God of my bitter hours, I think is the way he names it. And so I had to think about, you know, that whole thing of how the two facets, two poles, so to speak, the paradox, you know, of how divinity is there in our joys and in our sorrows. So it was things like that that were it was stretching for me sometimes, but really good, a good stretch.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Can anybody make up a name for God?
Definitely, I think so. And I think that's one of the really beautiful things, because it does speak about a personal relationship. And I was with a group of women, and one of the women read a poem one day, and she addressed God as the spirit of putter. And she had had a winter day when, you know, it was a time that she was home. She didn't go to work because of a lot of snow and everything, and she just puttered around. And then part of it was she wrote this prayer, like a psalm prayer, and she addressed it to the spirit of putter. And I just loved that. I thought it was just great, you know. So it's not, you know, blasphemous or something. I think rather it's like it really brings a person very close, and you know, they begin to experience God in the moment and not a God that's just out there someplace.
Well, thank you very much. This has been incredibly helpful, insightful, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Carrie. It's been a joy to be with you.
We want to thank you for joining us for this week's podcast, and to remind you to look online where we have some additional features, including a video reflection from Carrie Weber on Pentecost. Also, we have a look back at the Foley Poetry Contest winners, because this month we announced the winner for 2011. A reminder, you can respond to our podcast by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.